You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
And I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. What would it be like to see snowfall as repeating 89s, to immediately think 362 while hungry, and find the word lollipop to be the most beautifully round word in existence? This is how high-functioning, autistic, lifelong kineticist, essayist, author, and translator Daniel Tammet processes his world. And at once lyrical and analytical, full of travel writings, literary criticism, and intimate musings, his new book, Every Word is a Bird We Teach to Sing, celebrates the art of language. It's published by Little Brown and Company, and I'm pleased it's brought Daniel Tammet to our show, and I should say brings him back to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I think, at least this is our second time.
Yes.
Talking with each other on this show.
Yes, absolutely.
So is this your second time on this show?
Yes.
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 So this is our reunion after something like 10 years.
10 years, yes.
How have you been?
Very well. Thank you for asking.
And the last time we talked, you, in the subject of your book, you wrote a lot about meeting your boyfriend and how pivotal that was to your life. And now he's your husband.
Yes. Yes.
How long ago did you get married?
We married 2 years ago in a beautiful ceremony in Paris.
Just that alone is romantic. Well, let's talk about your current book, because I love saying it. Every word is a bird we teach to sing. Where does this title come from? What does it mean?
It means I see language as something that is fundamentally social, something that's alive. It's a living phenomenon. And words are so much more than just squiggles of ink or letters on a page. They have meanings that are personal and sometimes even private to each of us. And it's our imagination that brings them to life, that animates these words. And so I like to think of every word as a bird that we teach to sing, as something that we make it mean what it means. It's not words that tell us what we should say, but it's the human imagination which endows language with all of the mystery and the power and the magic.
Before you were officially diagnosed with high-functioning autism, you found ways to develop your own secret language. How
Yes.
did this secret language help you navigate your world?
Well, growing up as a child, I was very intrigued by numbers. Numbers, to me, have shapes and colors and textures in my mind. And the textures and the shapes, they're like calligraphy in Chinese or Japanese. They have meanings. And so I would look at an object, I would look at the snow falling in winter, and I would see 89s, because the number 89 has a shape, and the shape is like falling snow in my mind. Or I would have an emotion, like the emotion of feeling hungry, and because 181 in my mind is a shiny, round, long, round number, like a spoon. So it reminded me of a spoon, and in my private language of numbers growing up, this was the meaning that I associated with eating or wanting to eat. And as I got older, I remember a particular number in my language of numbers that doesn't exist in any other language. It doesn't exist in English. And it's a feeling that in my language is 757. And 757 is, the only thing I can compare it to is the shape of ginger root.
Hmm.
And it's round and lumpy and a little bit knotty. And this number shape for me has a meaning that is very hard to describe in English. As I say, there's no exact equivalent, but it's the feeling of loneliness and at the same time a great desire, commensurate desire, to reach out to other people, to overcome that loneliness. And I think that anyone born on the autistic spectrum, and many people who aren't, of course, born on the autistic spectrum, will immediately identify and recognize themselves in that emotion.
One number that you are fascinated by is pi.
Yes.
Talk about your pi reading. What was the process of learning all 22,514 digits?
It was, I discovered this as a kid growing up. There's this number that exists. It's called pi. It has something to do with circles. And it's a number that mathematicians call infinite. It literally goes on forever as a decimal expansion. So even if you had a sheet of paper the size of the universe, you wouldn't have enough space to write it all down. And this idea of something that was both so small in a way, a number that was between 3 and 4, because it begins 3.141, and yet enormous because it's bigger than the universe as a decimal expansion, just fascinated me. And the digits to me came alive in my mind. I didn't see them as numbers. I saw them as these stories and these almost like poetry, something like Homer, but written not in English or Greek, but in numbers, the language of numbers. And this was like my mother tongue growing up, the language of numbers. So I learned over the space of a winter, back in 2003, 2004, this number. I set an international record for reciting this number, but it wasn't for the record. It was more that I wanted to recite this beautiful poetry, and it was such an intense experience because people were coming to listen out of curiosity, but then they stayed for the emotion, because what I was doing was embodying this number, this abstraction, and making it human, making it something that was performed by my body, by my breath, by my personality. And the numbers were not just being spat out like a machine spits out numbers. It wasn't data to me. It was story. It was poetry. So it was coming out at different intonations, in different tones, in different speeds. Sometimes the numbers were heavy in my mouth and blue and dark, and they would come out more slowly. Sometimes they were bright and shiny, like violins playing, and the numbers would slow down, and people could pick this up from the public in the audience. And they weren't mathematicians, most of them, but they could feel that emotion. It was more about not just counting, but recounting what I had grown up with, all these years of living with numbers and autism. And it made me realize that I could be a writer. I had this gift for communication.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Daniel Tammet about his new book, Every Word is a Bird We Teach to Sing. You were just talking about your fascination with numbers.
Yeah.
And now you are, numbers to you are a language.
Yes.
And you've moved from numbers to actual language.
Yes.
How did that fascination with language lead you to write multiple books of different genres?
I, like many people born on the autistic spectrum, I always struggled with language, body language, the social aspects of language, looking people in the eye, knowing how to take turns in a conversation, all that stuff that people find intuitive. I found really difficult growing up, and I had to learn step by step. I spent a lot of time in the libraries growing up, just reading and reading and reading, and learning empathy from people like Shakespeare, because in the plays of Shakespeare, you've got all of those emotions, love and pain and fear and grief, and Shakespeare is so out there, it's so big emotions. And the characters are so out of this world. There's, you know, the King Lears and the Hamlets and the Romeos and Juliets. And so I learned so much from these characters. I learned how to think and how to use language socially, how to have dialogue. You know, I would take the dialogue out of a novel and try to use it in the playground and get it wrong and keep trying and get it better and better. So what was a struggle to me, like many struggles, became a passion. And this passion for language has taken me all around the world. I've met linguists and lexicographers and philosophers of language, but more importantly, I've met just people who have amazing stories to tell, because they were raised perhaps in, for example, Esperanto, which is a completely invented language. And what's it like to have an invented language as your mother tongue, for example? Or people who use their hands and their faces because they are sign language users and they can't communicate with words. They don't use words, but they use something that is just as sophisticated as spoken language in their signs. And that's, you know, so I'm exploring the way that language shapes reality, shapes our reality.
How many languages are you currently fluent in?
I'd say I'm pretty fluent in six.
Six?
Yes. And I have
English,
French, German, Spanish, Esperanto, and Icelandic.
Yeah. And I asked that question because I wanted to get you to Icelandic. You learned how to speak Icelandic fluently in a week.
Yes, yes.
How is that possible?
How
are you able to do it?
I have connections in my mind with words. I see words as I see numbers. Words have colors and textures and shapes and emotions. And when I look at words on a page, they come off the page. They come alive in my mind. They have they become like my friends. We almost talk together, and I get to feel what a word is trying to tell me from its shape, from the form it has, from the sounds it has. It's partly to do with my synesthesia. I can look at a word and I can say, this word feels sad, or this word looks red or orange, or has a particular emotion, a particular is shyer than this word, or is heavier than this word. And then I find often that the meanings in those languages relate in some way intuitively to what I'm seeing in my mind. It doesn't always work, but it often works enough that I can make these intuitive connections. And so what I'm doing is not simply memorizing, but it's using a sort of creativity, a linguistic creativity, to play with these words, to connect the words together. And then I form something like word webs, where I'm taking the words with similar forms and meanings that are fairly related. So that, for example, with Icelandic, I discovered that words that began with a particular sound in Icelandic, hn, you pronounce it with your nose, these are words that often deal with roundness. So, for example, words that deal with nuts or the globe, or even the shape that a cat makes when it's curling up in front of a fire. These were words that begin with that particular sound. And when I told this to the lady who was teaching me Icelandic in that week I had in Reykjavik, she said, I'm a native speaker. I've been teaching Icelandic for 20 years. I never noticed these connections before.
I have to ask you, since you speak all of these languages and they are real, they live, they are living things
yes.
to you. Say in French, you have the word rouge.
Rouge, yeah.
In English, it's red.
Yes.
Do they look the same to you?
No.
They do not?
No.
Excuse me. They don't at all. Because
no.
I was just wondering,
yeah.
you're learning Icelandic.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe the Icelandic word for red is the same as it is in French as it is in English. It's not that at all.
No, in Icelandic, it's rouge. And in French, it's rouge. In German, it would be rot. And these, every time it's of course the red is a good example. It's you know, it's similar, but the words, it feels heavier in German. It feels lighter in French, but it doesn't matter because I can make the connections. I'm making the connections within each language and not only between the languages. I'm not trying to compare the languages. I'm really trying to get to the heart of each language, how each language works as an intuitive phenomenon. And that's something that you can't do only by comparing one language to another.
Do you think there's a more natural way of learning languages
Absolutely.
Other than, say, like what I've been using to try to keep my Italian going, like Rosetta Stone?
I think so. I mean, this is what I do with the book as well. There's a whole chapter about my experience of learning and teaching in Lithuania. I was teaching English, obviously, and I was learning Lithuanian, which is one of the oldest languages in Europe. And it goes back to Sanskrit, apparently, in India. So it's a very old language. And Lithuania was a fascinating experience for me because it was the country where you couldn't speak Lithuanian for decades. The Soviets were there before, and they would send book inspectors around to your house if you had folded a page over the name of Stalin, and they caught you doing this. You know, maybe if you hadn't even done it deliberately, they would take your books and arrest you. So people would just burn their books and not take the risk of having the book inspector turn up in the middle of the night and check, you know, what your books look like, if you've got coffee stains on this word or that word. And it made me realize the power of language. And in Lithuania, I took these books of poetry, and I was teaching the women poetry, because in poetry you just use one word and it can mean 10 different things. So rather than just trying to repeat it with 10 different words, it's better to look at the concepts. What do you want to say as a concept? You want to talk about love, you want to talk about emotion, you want to talk about your life, you want to talk about memory, you want to talk about... And these are things that you don't get in a vocabulary list. These are things that you get from poetry and from literature. So I was taking short stories, I was taking poetry, and I was teaching the women to look at the words, the form of the words, and play with those shapes. Take a dictionary, find words with similar shapes, similar letters, similar sounds. Are the meanings related? How are they related? And to form their own shapes in their minds of different combinations of words. And as they grew more confident, because play is something that we can all relate to, we've been doing it all our lives from kids on, it's something that just made them so much more enthusiastic. And I realized that enthusiasm doesn't make good dances at all. You know, everyone has this capacity, just you need to know how to teach people.
What language would you like to learn next?
I've heard a lot of good things about Chinese.
It's such a big challenge.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. But it would be similar in a way to my language of numbers, because it's calligraphy, it's using shapes to describe meanings, and that's something that I find very attractive. So that's certainly something I would want to look at next.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. I've been speaking with the essayist and novelist Daniel Tammet. His latest book is Every Word is a Bird We Teach to Sing. Daniel, so great to see you
again.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.